Sample reading from Cotton Mill Cowboys and Other Characters I've Known, written by Richard Thorpe. Under the House. With the exception of those occupied by boss men, the Mill Hill houses of my youth were not underpinned. Instead, many of them sat as much as 5 feet off the ground atop brick pillars that were 18 inches square and spaced at 6-foot intervals. If left uncovered, the large openings made the already drafty houses much harder to heat. Many times, I've heard my dad say, "It would take a direct pipeline from hell to heat a cotton mill house." Still, it was up to each occupant to use his own initiative and imagination to keep the cold wind from blowing the small children out of bed. A few people with the know-how and the money bricked up the open spaces, but most villagers were forced to use something less expensive or something they could find at the nearest dump that included old metal signs, tar paper, roll roofing, scrap lumber, and an assortment of other things. Some parents purchased stove wood in large quantities and had their kids stack it between the brick pillars. That particular method was a losing proposition because the space opened up as the wood was used, and it was an invitation to termites, as if we needed more problems. In the summer, we kids showed a lot of creativity in the ways we used the spaces beneath our houses. Few of us owned store-bought toys, so the spaces became a variety of things in our worlds of fantasy. For the girls, and sometimes the boys, the space became a playhouse where makeshift furniture was set up and the roles of homemakers acted out. Tin cans and jar lids were used as cooking utensils and dishes, while cardboard boxes served as tables and major appliances. If a girl was lucky enough to own a tea set, she would serve penny drink, a forerunner of Kool-Aid. Converting the space into a play school was a favorite of many kids. The teacher role was usually assumed by a dominating and sadistic female who was prone to mete out excess punishment with hickory switches. The switches were standard props for any play school, so we just had to take our chances. The seating arrangement for the school could easily be converted to a play Sunday school, at which one of the more extroverted males would preach a sermon chastising us for our wicked ways. The service always included the passing of an offering plate, though bottle caps were the most a make-believe parson could hope to earn. I recall one enterprising youngster who came up with the idea of using his underhouse space as a theater, where he charged whatever the traffic would bear. If my memory serves me correctly, his take included a few peanuts, an apple, an orange, 2 pennies, and a frog. Many of his patrons demanded a refund when they realized his idea of a movie was holding panels clipped from a comic strip against a blanket he had tacked up to hang from the floor joist. The flashlight his sister shined on the panels did little to provide the excitement his audience had expected. Realizing there was a demand for a good theater under one of the houses, my sister Patricia, we called her Trick, and I capitalized on the basic idea but acted out the comic strip plots live in the space underneath our own porch. Reception to our stellar performances was less than enthusiastic, and our take was about the same as the original theater owner. As each idea wore thin, we tried to come up with something new. I believe I was the first, and fortunately the last, kid on my block to open a barbershop. My career as a barber came to an abrupt halt when several irate neighbors brought their children around for Dad to inspect their gapped-up hairdos. My experience and ability left something to be desired, but my price was hard to beat. Sometimes, I would even pay kids to let me cut their hair. Another interesting thing that went on under our house was the never-ending search for doodlebugs. In recent years, I've discovered that the proper name for them is antlions, but we enjoyed antagonizing them under either name. It was easy to spot the lair of a doodlebug because of its conical shape, designed in such a way that ants attempting to cross it slid on loose sand down into center hole where the inhabitants' jaws were waiting. We never attempted to capture a doodlebug without using a special ritual handed down from countless generations. Using a pointed stick, we scratched the soft dirt around the hole in a circular motion as we chanted, "Doodlebug, doodlebug, you better come out, 'cause your house is on fire." Whether or not the doodlebug bought the story about the fire, he had no choice but to come out as the sharp stick invaded his domain. Once captured, the bug was kept in a glass jar until we tired of it. At that time, it was either set free or squashed, depending on our mood. Playing under the house was a lot of fun, but it did present at least one potential hazard. My mother, like many women her age, was a snuff dipper. When her work was caught up, she enjoyed rocking in a chair on the front porch and occasionally spitting the tobacco juice into the yard. A kid with a bad sense of timing, who had tired of playing under the house, could easily wind up needing an emergency shampoo. It happened to at least one of my sisters and several of our unsuspecting playmates. The house where my kids have spent most of their life has a full finished basement, and there is no crawl space at all. However, I am sure their fertile minds have found other ways to create the equivalent of our playhouses, play schools, and the like. The sad thing is, they may never know the joy of searching for doodlebugs under the house.